Good afternoon. This is a joint Entelago off-pound assessment session. Today is 16 October 2009. The title of the discussion is the OOR sandbox and the OOR requirements for comparative analysis. My name is Todd Patrick. I'll be giving an overview of things. And then Natasha Noy and Mike Kador will give a presentation from the BioPortal as the only functional OOR sandbox. Then Ken Bukowski will give a presentation on OOR in the classroom and experience support. Alicia Kendall will then present a discussion or a review of requirements in the OOR from a standards management perspective. And finally, Mike Dean will give a talk on OOR versus current state. So with that, I'll begin.
So I want to go through a few preliminaries, and then we'll go on to the comparison, and at the end I'll talk about some analysis and recommendations based on that. So here's some agenda and some expectations. I want to go through some what are our assumptions and some definitions. What are the core requirements that I think we've all agreed to? And then I want to go through the requirements versus capability comparison, and that is the requirements that we've already identified for OR versus capabilities that the BioPortal or sandbox currently has. And then the analysis and a challenge at the end for everybody. So I want to first start off with...
Could you announce the slide change and also the slide number, if you please?
That's right. I'm sorry, Peter. Thank you. I'm now on slide 3. Title Signaling Suspender. The material I'm going to present is based on my review of the BioPortal code of version tag 1016 and a bit of a review of the BioPortal code version 1018. I was only informed about recently. And Natasha, if you're on the line, I have to, first of all, thank Natasha and Misha. First, Natasha, for pointing out some errors that I had made in my analysis of the code. And I also want to thank Misha for providing some commentary in the code itself, which helped in trying to understand what was going on. So let's go to the next slide, please, slide 4. Some definitions that I presented before, what a repository is, and what we think an ontology repository is. Again, an ontology repository is a facility where we can store these things and their related information artifacts and then get them back and be able to manage them. And I want to stress the term repository here in this discussion. So on to slide 5. So what are the goals we have in mind? Well, for the OOR, we want to be able to provide an architecture and infrastructure that supports the creation, sharing, searching, governance, management, all the good stuff for ontology and the related data that comes with them. And in fact, the related data that's going to be crucial for the OOR to work well. And then we also want to be able to import linkages to database and XML schema structures and documents at a later point. We do understand that in order to meet these goals, it's going to be an evolutionary path and we're going to move along. And with the introduction of the BioPortal as a sandbox, that's a really big step forward. And we have to thank the people at the NCBO. Then the complementary goal of having this capability is we get to foster the use of ontology in a consistent and reliable fashion, which will then help the semantic web community to be able to identify and promote the best practices. And we'll be able to provide services that are relevant for the various representation languages. And hence sort of report the best practices. On to slide 6, some of the architectural principles that we'd like to support. As I said, we're going to have to do an evolutionary development. We do not have the resources or in fact even the understanding at this point to meet all of our goals in a very short time frame. And as we've seen over the past decade or more, things keep changing and we'll have to be able to adapt to those changes in order to meet the goals continuously. We do have to be able to support distributed instances, which is why our description of the things that make up the OOR is of paramount importance. We want to provide the services for the capabilities that we are claiming will be there, but they have to be decoupled properly from the functionality of the repository and then sufficiently decoupled from the various representation languages so that we can provide a uniform level of service and capability across all the possible representation languages. Having that will then allow the ability to have the distributed instances and support the federation capability and allow whomever comes along to develop or implement the actual details of under what goes on under the hood, however they wish. We want to avoid dependencies and particular hierarchical dependencies. You know, for instance, DNS is a hierarchical dependency structure. We'd like to avoid that if possible. A further goal, don't laugh too loud, we'd like this to be ontologically driven. And of course, the best example today is some of the work coming out of Prop Quadrant in their product. And of course, in order to meet some of the other goals, we also have to be platform independent. And I'll say a little more, talk more about that later. On to slide 7. Some assumptions that we are making. Now, the first one I've already stated earlier is one of our principles, but we're assuming it's going to go in an evolutionary fashion. We just jump along as best we can. We need to have a partition of functionality, and I explain that's an assumption we're making, and thus it should be moved into a requirement. Now, currently, I heard consensus, I think, and someone can jump in later and tell me otherwise, that the OOR at this point is not planning on storing ontology instance data apart from what needs to be there for the infrastructure, whether it's policies, rules, or something else. Now, on the other hand, we do not want to present an impediment to allow this to be extended to port instance data. Okay, so now next assumption is the repository architecture and many of the capabilities we'd like to provide are going to be independent of representation languages. Now, of course, when you go to implement those capabilities, you get into a particular language you want to support, and then you get a coupling there. But the architecture should be as much decoupled in terms of what the implementer would have to work with as possible, i.e. interfaces. Initially, we're going to have support for OWL and its various flavors. The metadata and the provenance information that needs to be there to support both discovery and ranking, if you like, we hope will be ontology-based. And I believe Natasha and Nisha can talk to that. They're already doing some of that in BioPortal. We'd like to use standards-based to the extent possible where those standards are relevant and provide value. And a realization I made is you have this implicit assumption that was not made explicit that we're not considering a real-time or even a near real-time system. Now, in general, the way ontologies are currently used, this notion never even comes up for discussion because it's an implicit assumption that we're not going anywhere near real-time. However, as ontologies become more the fabric of infrastructure and operational systems, it may be the case that we now have to then consider, well, what if we want to use it for a near real-time system? Okay, we're not going to consider that at this point. And another assumption is that we will be able to federate the various instances of OOR. On to slide 8. So the core requirements. Well, it's a repository, so we've got to store stuff. We have to manage what we store. We do have to provide governance of the stuff we're storing and the related items. And the governance issue is kind of thorny, I think. I don't think we've figured out all of the aspects of that. But, again, BioPortal and their next issue give us some idea of what the problems may be. Discovery and searching. That one is going to be a rather interesting problem to represent in a platform-independent fashion, also a language-independent fashion. Whether it's OWL, whether it's Common Logic, or using RDFS, or something else that comes along. We do need to have some scalability, some parallelism, and initially that may not be a concern. However, if we are running this at an enterprise, whether it's the federal government or any large corporation, scalability will become an issue. And again, maybe not for the way we're currently using repositories where the time of interaction can be minutes or hours or days for that matter, but if these become more prevalent, as they most likely will for pragmatic reasons, the scalability in terms of the transaction rate will have to be addressed. We do have to have multi-language support. OWL doesn't answer everything. Common Logic is better at some things than others. Maybe RDFS is adequate or whatever. We are not going to work on a particular or focus on a particular knowledge domain. That is just another independent variable floating around. We do need to be platform independent as a requirement, and I'll say more about that later. And as I said earlier, sort of this gray part here, we don't want to impede anyone from extending the OOR to support instance data. On to slide 9. BioPortal. Natasha, for correcting some of my misunderstandings about bioportals. My original incorrect assumption was that they had initially been focused on just the biological domain, and in fact, that's not the case. The interaction at this point is sort of a web interaction with humans on the end there, as opposed to machine-machine interaction. They do support REST services, and again, they have the same assumption that they're not concerned with a near real-time situation. On to slide 10. And to, Natasha, please, if I say anything wrong, please jump on me and correct it straight away. Persistence. Okay, now here we're going to go into the comparative part of this talk. Well, how are these things going to be persistent? Well, at this point, your OOR hasn't specified much in that realm, but it could be in memory, especially if you do solid-state drives, if you think of that. Though, of course, it doesn't really matter from the end-user perspective. If you're using file systems, if you're using a database, if you're using a triple store, if there's some other persistence mechanism that has to be supported, whether it's a photonic system or I don't know what. Right now, BioPortal is supporting persistence via files, persisting URLs, URIs, and they do have database support. On to slide 10. Content. Okay, comparison between what you'd like to do with OOR and what BioPortal can do now. Well, of course, we both like to support ontology, and then we want to support ontology metadata, and BioPortal is now supporting that. We need to support rules, and the rules are both for the particular domain and the ontology in the domain, and also for our own infrastructure. We'd like to use a rule-based governance mechanism to enforce policies. So we also then have to store rules and the policies, and we have to deal with any other infrastructure ontology instances to make the operation feasible. BioPortal is storing infrastructure ontology instances, and they are storing ontology metadata together with URIs and URLs. So here's the content that they store, there's a comparison, and they're pretty much the same. On to knowledge domain. So again, as I mentioned earlier, Natasha corrected me, BioPortal supports any knowledge domain, though I am a little confused about that part, and I'll ask her later. The OOR is a basic assumption and requirement that we support any, and that has implications as to how you build things. Makes it simple in some cases and harder in others. On to slide 13, representation languages. The goal is to support OWL and flavors, RDF, RDFS, Common Logic, perhaps XML schema. And right now, BioPortal does support the various flavors of OWL, OBOE, Protege, LexGrid XML, and RRF. So they're certainly way ahead of us. Of course, they have a real implementation too. Now, an aspect of representation languages is that you have to be able to now properly separate the concerns of the repository and then the services that the repository needs to facilitate or host and their connection to the languages that you're trying to support. We have to be real careful that we don't allow a particular language to influence how the various capabilities are expressed and then implemented. On to slide 14. Okay, content ontology services. And this is probably the main place where currently there is a big difference between what we'd like OOR to do and what BioPortal does. And hopefully Natasha can say more about that if there is going to be a closer alignment in the future. But of course, both need to support browsing and discovery or search. Visualization of the various ontologies can help. Syntax validation. Now, one of the items I discovered, and this was in Benjamin Dye's roadmap document, that they're assuming that the submitter of an ontology has already done their syntax validation and some consistency checking, and therefore BioPortal doesn't have to do that. OOR is making the assumption and then providing the requisite capability to do syntax validation and then provide consistency checking to some extent. Of course, those are both language dependent. We also now have to provide some capability for modularization to facilitate the use of ontologies in intelligent fashion. We then also want to provide editing and creation capabilities, which you can think of as almost the same, for ontologies. And then a mapping capability, and alert notification or subscription mechanism to notify users of changes or new things that pop up. That mechanism itself is going to be dependent on the domains that are supported and perhaps the metadata structure that we end up with. And then a ranking capability. Now, BioPortal already has browsing, search, nice visualization. They have an alert notification description mechanism, a demapping, and they have a rudimentary ranking capability. So I think the only differences here are the assumptions that BioPortal made about who's going to do some of the syntax checking and consistency validation, or syntax validation and consistency checking. Now, the issue of modularization is certainly going to be part of...
I'm sorry, this is Natasha. Can I just clarify something here?
Oh, please, yes.
So I'm not sure whether you would call this syntax validation or not, but the thing is when we do get the ontologies in, we do parse them, and, you know, parse the way the syntax validation is by parsing, and if the ontology doesn't parse, it's not explorable. We don't... In that sense...
I'm not doing syntax validation yet.
So if that's called syntax validation, then yes, we're doing it. So we will take an ontology that's not parsable. It will be downloadable, but it won't be able to... So the validation is set there that it won't be explorable.
Okay. Well, I guess by validation, I also have the implicit notion that this is a governance policy. If it doesn't pass the parsing and syntax, it ain't going to get in.
Yeah. So that's what we're trying, but yeah. Well, okay. We don't have that as part of governance.
Oh, okay. Well, fine. We'll keep making those clarifications if I make errors. I don't want to mislead people.
Sure. And since I got unmuted, I'll mention on the domain, I think it's I'll clarify. So BioPortal itself is a repository of biomedical ontology. However, the software is not specific to biomedicine at all, as the OR sandbox demonstrates, right? So we basically deployed exactly the same software for the OR sandbox, which is not domain specific. But the BioPortal itself is a repository of biomedical ontology.
Yes, the way it's currently used mostly.
Well, that's actually part of BioPortal governance policy. The ontology has absolutely nothing to do with biomedicine. It's not relevant for researchers in biomedicine. We will take it down.
Right. Okay. But that's done as a human interaction as opposed to a machine interaction.
We can't automatically determine whether something is biomedical or not. I mean, we could, I guess. There are some ways to figure it out, but... Yes, it's certainly on the governance side, on the human side.
Okay. Thank you for your clarification.
Yeah.
Okay, on to... There's something else I want to say here. I can't think of it right now. Okay, on to slide 15, a comparison between the management capabilities. For OOR, we need the standard content configuration management, which BioPortal already provides, but we'd like to do it in a policy-based fashion. You have to have access control, and again, we'd like to have policy-based and goal-based. And of course, BioPortal has access control currently. But then we'd also like to have some auditing capabilities in terms of looking for statistics for access, for usage, who's coming in, how many people are coming in, when they're coming in, so on. And then there's issues of infrastructure management. Can we actually look at the process status and then control the processes if he's running as a distributed system? And I'm thinking of things like you have in JBoss, or you can get with Genie, or some of the other larger network control systems. Can you look at policy status? Can you edit policies? Can you control the policies properly and modify their enforcement rules? And that's for policy enforcement. That's all part of the management structure that we would need and hope to have in OOR.
Todd, on the auditing, and when you said that we want to have we want to know who's accessing the repository, et cetera, should it be available for everyone publicly, or is it the maintainers need to have information?
I would assume that would be implemented as a policy. Certainly the system administrator and certain roles, I'm assuming the system of role-based access control, going on certain roles would have to have the ability to look at that, and maybe in terms of the ranking capabilities, statistics about, you know, how many times it was looked at and how many times it was downloaded.
Okay.
Things like
that. Yeah, because that's the sort of thing we do have in our portal. We don't provide public access, but, you know, with any web server, as it is, so, you know, we have statistics and we have, you know, Google Analytics and we have our local statistics on it. So we do have that information. We don't at the moment provide access, you know, for web services or anything to it.
Yeah. Now, I don't know how important some of that information would be in a federated system, but again, this is an evolutionary development. We'll have to figure out and learn whether that is of value or not.
I can say that it is of value, actually. We have been asked by people for submitting. The reason we sort of looked into that more in more detail, because people who submit their anthologies to our portal, they often come back to us saying, okay, can you tell me how much your anthology is getting viewed at?
Pay-per-view sort of thing?
Yeah, well, no, well,
yeah, I know.
That's not the idea.
No, I was thinking the value of sharing this information across federated instances of OOR. Is there any value?
Yeah, federation is a different issue, yes.
Yeah, exactly. On to slide 16, discovery. Now, I'm using the term discovery in terms of the word search. When you mention the word search, there's all sorts of connotations that come into play there, and I'd like to try and avoid as many of those connotations as possible. Now, if you look at many dictionaries, there's not a great deal of distinction between the term discovery and search, but I like discovery, so I'll stick to that one for now, simply my slide. Okay, so you need to be able to search on language. You need to be able to search on aspects of the metadata. And the metadata, of course, hopefully will include things like the author, the domain of the ontology, something about describing how that ontology is used, i.e. application usage, what version you're at, when's the last time it was created, or as you said, when it was created, the last time it was edited, or last time it was updated. Be able to search on concepts. Be able to search on relations. Be able to search on particular attributes that are represented in the metadata. Or if there are particular attributes relevant for a domain, if there's a common vocabulary for that domain, be able to search on those terms. And then the issue of whether you're searching locally or globally, and if it's global or if it's not locally, how far you get to search. That's the federation issue. Now, in BioPortal, you can search on the language of the format, the author, the version, the upload date, status, the category, the group term, and also free text, which is a good thing. But that gets into scalability issues and parallelism, which you've got to address straight away. Now, one of the things I found with BioPortal, and I didn't understand in process,
we use a generic search that lets you search in any ontology element.
Yeah.
That includes relations. So we'll come back to search results. We don't actually have it. Unfortunately, you will get an error when you... So you can look at the details, but when you try to click on it and try to find it in BioPortal, you will get an error because we need to fix that because BioPortal's display is really centered around classes.
Right. But that's a particular asymmetry you decided to put in there, and I don't think OOR should support that. It should be symmetric against all the relevant components of an ontology.
Uh-huh.
So there are issues with that. Actually, that brings up another issue that just your notes just kept me there, prompted my thinking about it, is perhaps you need a way to develop all the names of classes and all the names of relations. That's a big list. It occurred to me that it may be of value in a browser so that if you've identified a particular ontology you want to look at, if you could browse through just all the labels for the classes, i.e. how they're named, and all the names of the relations that are in there.
So given that some of the ontologies have about 100,000 classes, I'm not sure you really want to browse through that list, to be honest.
Okay, as I said, it may not make sense.
So we do have a web service, for example, that will return you all the concepts, and you can do whatever you want with that. We do have autocomplete in the later releases. So if you're browsing an ontology, there is a box at the top that says jump to, you can start typing and it will start autocompleting after 3 characters. So that just to give you an idea of sort of similar things that are starting with those 3 characters.
Actually, okay, that sounds like a plausible implementation strategy.
Because we're in the domain where some of the ontologies have literally tens of thousands, and not one, but many of them have tens of thousands of concepts, browsing the list is not really plausible.
Okay. Well, that's a good knowledge to know. Okay, on to slide 17. Interfaces. Now, OOR is going to be completely defined by interfaces, and I'll say more about that in a bit. But we'll need human-facing interfaces. We'll need machine-facing interfaces. We'll need perhaps federation-facing interfaces. Maybe they're different than just general machine-facing interfaces. BioPortal certainly has a very nice human web interface. They also have REST services for machine interaction. And I have to say, Natasha, the new version that BioPortal actually pointed to is much better than the other one, the earlier version. I'm impressed about the amount of progress that people can make. Okay, going on. Here's a slightly confused slide talking about content representation. And this gets back to the platform-independent expression of OOR. If you're going to implement something, you're going to have to start manipulating the content, i.e. the ontology and other metadata, in some platform-specific fashion. But we have to be careful that when we go to express what those interfaces for, that what the interfaces for OOR are, that we don't intermingle particular platform-specific and how you have to handle things with that platform with the actual capability that we want OOR to have. So yes, the content representation or the representation for the implementation representation we have to use is called RIR, repository implementation representation. It's going to certainly have to be related to discovery, implementation details, and the management details in government. But we don't want to closely couple to persistent mechanisms or research mechanisms for that matter, or the ownership issues. And of course, the ownership can be intellectual property things in addition to particular authors or organizations. On to slide 19, discovery research. It should be symmetric among all the things, and I just look at concepts and relations, but if there's other attributes of other forms composed in a particular representation language, they have to be represented in search capability. And this is where it can get a little confusing depending on the particular representation language you're using. You don't want to have a real tight coupling with the particular implementation representation, i.e. I can move stuff around as a beam or something else. So it's like not to have that tightly coupled with your overall search capability. And of course, we do need some close coupling with the metadata of the ontology, however that's accomplished for the particular implementation. And now, Natasha, perhaps one of the things I didn't understand with BioPortal, and perhaps you can explain to me, is the use of categories.
So the categories are something that, it's a way to group ontologies based on, you know, anatomy ontologies. So you're looking for an anatomy ontologist, for example, so you can just select that category and you'll have just the anatomy ontology. Or just ontologies have to do with investigations or whatever other categories there are. And many of these ontologies actually, so the category is provided by the ontology author. When they submit the ontology, one of the things in the form is they can select one category or several categories that their ontology belongs to.
And who gets to add these categories? You say
the ontology authors.
They can extend that list of categories.
Oh, no, so they can add the list of available categories?
Yes.
Well, they have to ask us to do that. I mean, there's no interface for that, and we'll usually do that with here so that, you know, we have a meaningful list of categories. It hasn't come up as an issue yet, to be honest. So we took the list of categories essentially from the OBOFounder, which is another repository of biomedical ontologies from which we pull about half of our ontologies, and we extended it a little bit, and it hasn't been an issue. But if an author found that his ontology can be categorized and contacted us, we'll certainly work with them to make sure there is a category for them.
I can understand having a category to aid in finding what you're looking for, but I suspect in arbitrary domains, I think biology has a lot of advantages in terms of that since they've been working on categorization for much longer. But for other arbitrary domains, I don't know if you'd be able to support that in an intelligent fashion.
Probably not. I'm not sure. I mean, in this case, we're certainly taking advantage of having a more or less constrained domain.
Yes.
In other cases, you know, the domain itself will be the category.
That's one.
You know, and all the biology ontology may be under one category. Absolutely.
On to slide 20. I'm almost done. Now we get to the analysis of some of the recommendations. Well, as I've already said many times, the OOR will be completely identified by its interfaces, so they really have to be well specified. And unfortunately, the term interface already has a lot of baggage along with it, connotations and such, and maybe we need a different term. We certainly have to have these things, these interfaces, expressed in a platform-independent fashion, and we really have to work hard to avoid embedding any developmental colloquialisms or paradigms, and by those I mean things like if you're doing Beam, if you're doing Gene stuff, if you're doing Corvus stuff. You don't want to have those embedded in any fashion, because whatever those developments and the cultures and the paradigms are today, give it a few years, it'll change again. And I mean, one thing I'm going to push for, I think it's a reasonable requirement, I believe it's a need, is we need to partition our interfaces by functionality. And again, this is where part of the development paradigm can creep in, where the paradigm forces you to partition things based on their paradigm and not on the functionality or the capability that you want to end up presenting to the user, whether that user is a person, a machine, or something else. So some of the benefits of having this partition by functionality, if someone comes in, they can look at it and they can have a better understanding of what it is and what the relationships are between the various pieces. And hopefully, because of that simplified understanding and the clarity of the terms we use and our partition, it should facilitate the integration and extension of the OOR. And ideally, it would be nice to have the OOR interfaces derived from an ontological representation of OOR. So, going on to slide 21, here's some recommendations. They're notional for what the functionality or the namespace partition might look like. So you have an access capability, and there are different types of access. There's a source capability or persistent capability, and there's different ways to persist things. There's a content capability, and the content capability, of course, has a language dependency issue on there, but there's also infrastructure content, and then there's content services, or if you want to call that services, or the content capability. Then there's a discovery capability, and then a management capability, and a governance capability. Now, of course, these things are not independent. They have couplings and relations. But from understanding what OOR is and how you could develop implementations of it and extend it or improve it, I think having a clear delineation of responsibilities and capabilities will really facilitate that. Again, independent of any development colloquialisms or paradigms. And finally, 22, here's the challenge. Can we start developing an OOR ontology? I think that's all I have to say. So, Natasha, it's up to you and Michael right now.
Okay, I'll start and Mr. Chen chime in whenever I say something wrong or people want to say something. So, you know, Senator brings up the slide. Okay. So, what I was going to talk about, I was going to basically take more or less from where Todd left off and talk about Bar Portal as essentially, I mean, at this point, it's the only functioning OR sandbox. I hope the situation is going to change, but for the moment, I'll talk about our specific experiences, and as Todd pointed out, some of the features in Bar Portal, so Bar Portal certainly doesn't satisfy all the OR requirements, and part of that, and I'll basically go through the list of for this delta, and part of that is because we simply didn't have resources yet to implement it, and part of it is because it's not on our midterm horizon, for example, simply because in our domain, and it's maybe less relevant, and we are to a large extent driven by our users. So if it's not really relevant for our users, we may not address it in the near future. Next slide, please. So just a reminder, Bar Portal is a community-based ontology repository. Let me go back to that slide, thank you. So the slide has the link on how to get to it. Anyone can submit ontologies to Bar Portal. Currently it has about, I think, 106 ontologies. You can browse the ontologies there, you can search across them, you can trace mapping between ontology and sex pipelines. So BioModel is the product of the National Center for Biomedical Ontology, which is one of the five national centers for biomedical computing launched by the National Institute of Health. It is actually a collaboration of several teams, including our team at Stanford, the Mayo Clinic, the University of Buffalo, University of Victoria in British Columbia, and several other driving biological projects and collaborators. And so the primary goal of the center in general, as stated, is to make ontologies accessible and usable, which is quite cognizant with the general goals for the OR. And the research team and our research was to develop technologies for ontology dissemination, index training, alignment, and peer review. Next slide, please. So, as I mentioned, BioModel is the main part of the key technology and sort of the umbrella for most of the technologies from the NCBO. And it provides, in addition to access and search and browsing of ontologies, it provides capabilities for peer review, so you can go and review any ontology there. Anyone can review any ontology. Users can provide comments and notes on the ontology, so carry out discussions about specific terms. We'll support ontology versioning. We can submit additional versions of the ontology. Users can create mappings between any term in one ontology and a term in another ontology. So mappings provide total of many concepts of concept mapping. You can, as I mentioned, you can search across ontologies and provide access to a number of biomedical resources that are annotated with terms from the ontology. Next slide, please. So, highlights of the pathology, so it is a library of biomedical ontology. So all the biomedical, essentially everything you see in the biomedical interface, with a few exceptions that will disappear in the next couple of months, is available through REST services. So our own user interface uses those REST services. So you can, you know, the REST services to access the pathology and the concept in it, to try to make the versions of an ontology, to search across them, and so on. As I mentioned in the discussion with Todd, while the BioPortal itself is a repository of biomedical ontologies, the technology is domain independent. There are installations of BioPortal for libraries and other domains, including the OR sandbox. The code is open source, and the slide was released to technology specs that we're using. So if you do want to install BioPortal on your own, these are the kinds of technologies you have to deal with. Next slide, please. Okay. So OR and BioPortal. The OR sandbox currently runs the BioPortal code, essentially. It's exactly the same code. I think the changes that we modify BioPortal slightly, you know, like minor things like change the logo, remove the OVO format from the list of available ontology languages because it's the format that's clearly not used outside of biomedical ontologies. A few other little things like that. The assumption, though, is that the code will diverge and someone on the OR side will start adding those capabilities that we discussed today that BioPortal is missing, and so OR sandbox will be submitted a separate entity. But as I said earlier, BioPortal has its own user base that we need to respond to, and that's really what primarily drives our requirements and, of course, our funding. And we do have, for example, regular BioPortal user group meetings, teleconferences, where we solicit feedback from our users, and that actually does feed insight actually into our requirements and our priorities. Next slide, please. So what I want to go during the next few slides is go through the slides, through the things that Todd identified that are not yet in BioPortal from the OR requirements, and talk about whether we're planning it and sort of what our thoughts are. And I think I was working on some earlier version of Todd's slides, so this would not be exactly identical to what we've seen on those slides. But we'll cover most of the ground, and Todd, feel free to chime in if I'm missing or misrepresenting some of these differences. So first, those systems. The one thing that was missing there that BioModel doesn't currently have is a triple cell-based storage. That's the direction we're moving towards. It is probably a major redesign. So it's not going to happen in the short term, but we're submitting our renewal proposal this year, we will be discussing how we'll have a triple, we'll review our plans for triple cell-based implementation. rule we are unlikely to address in the next year. It's not something that's very, that our users seem to be complaining about, but if someone were to add that, we'd be delighted. Policies, we will have some support. One of the things that we do have a lot of requests for are things like private areas of our portal. So right now, anything that can make our portal is immediately public and open to the world. So people want to use their sort of mini, you know, their rooms or whatever, so that they can discuss their own policies that they not get the ready for public consumption, but use all the other facilities in Barbara, such as notes, such as mappings, you know, discussions, but, you know, keep it private to people. So that is coming down the horizon. Whether policies will be policy-based or not, I'm not quite sure. It will probably in the beginning just run something very, very simple, and then go from there. Next slide, please. Representation languages. As was discussed in one of the OR telecons, is so we, as Todd listed, we're supporting OWL, RDF, RDFS, OBOL, LexBridge, and I'm missing one, RRF, which is the format for the Unified Medical Language System, produced by the National Library of Medicine. Some support for some other languages is easy to add. Support for common logic turned out to be harder than we expected, in part because our user interface, you know, is driven, as was already noted earlier, by, you know, when you're browsing the anthology, we're focusing on the metaphor, you know, class tree, and it's not necessarily useful for some languages that are more rule-based or action-based. So, because we have a very simple data model that drives our user interface, so that's why, you know, it's not that easy to adapt the same differences there. For the moment, the only thing you can do if you want to add anthologies in other form ones, it's fairly easy to extend our portals to just let you upload anthology in that form when you say that it's same common logic and let others download it and perhaps even search it, because you could actually add them to the index. Browsing would probably be a big issue. So I'm not sure how useful that would be without the browser. Next slide, please. Anthology services. So as with the class, so some of the kind of fundamental syntax validation is there because, you know, we do parse the anthology, so if it doesn't parse, we do know we can handle it. Consistency checking, we were kind of going back and forth on that. We may or may not add it because some of our users are saying, well, it would be nice if we submitted a description logic anthology to a classifier. We might do that. On the other hand, you know, there's so many classifiers available, they're public, so why not turn in before you submit it to us, because then you can control which classifier we do think they actually tend to look at different aspects of the language. So I'm not sure what's going to happen on that front. Editing and creation of anthologies, which was one of the things, big things that was missing. And BioPortal was exclusively designed as an anthology library. And, you know, when you come to the library, you look at the books, you know, you might add post-it notes to the book. You don't actually go and start rewriting the book. And that's really the metaphor that we use. On the other hand, another product that also our research group is developing is called the Linux Training Unit, which is Protégé. And specifically, one of its greatest, and I think greatest additions, is Web Protégé, which is essentially a web client, a lightweight web client to anthology editing, to Protégé, which doesn't give you the full power of a desktop client, of a fixed client, but actually gives you a lot of, which is what most people would want, you know, it's the 80-20 or maybe 90-10 rule, so, you know, it actually does give the capabilities that 90% of our users want. And one of the things that we're about to start working on is integrating WebProtégé and BioPortal. So BioPortal already uses Protégé API for a lot of the infrastructure, for handling metadata, for handling only our now their anthologies, for it doesn't yet use Persian mechanisms for nodes and mapping, but it will in the next few weeks. So it's only natural that, you know, if you're, for example, an anthology developer and you came in and you want to act on some of the suggestions that some of the visitors to your anthology in Barcode made, you log in as the anthology developer, you push the button on the page to see that Persian interface, where you can actually edit an anthology and create a new version and, you know, resubmit the new version to BioPortal. So we're starting to working out on how that should look, and that is the work that we, I think at this point, it's confirmed that we're funded to do a major expenditure, a mechanic expenditure actually. What's the latest on that is, but that's very likely to happen because there's a lot of interest in that. And, that's, and I mean, we have the editor available, we have a web-based editor available, so it's only natural for us to bring those two infrastructures together. Next slide, please. And what else are we missing? Auditing. As I said, we have rudimentary auditing, quality control of contributing oncologists in the sense that, you know, we have a curator here in the group who, you know, once in a while goes through the oncologist and, you know, if she finds something that's completely unreasonable, you know, she'll contact the author or if she also doesn't apply, we'll take it down. We also, since we do have RSS feeds, so like, I know that I, for example, subscribe to the RSS feeds and bar portal updates, so, you know, I could immediately look at what has been submitted and we can act on it, you know, if there is some problem. We hope to get more community involvement in this class, in a sense, because, as I mentioned, one of the things you can do with Bar Portal is add reviews to the anthologies. And so if the, the community gets more involved and we get more of those, we could think of that as a, you know, an auditing class, as in, because you know, the community could say that this anthology should be taken down. Next slide, please. Discovery. Metadata search. Metadata search is a weak point, you know that. So as I mentioned, you can discover, in a sense, you know, you could look at the anthology list in Bar Portal and see and search them, for example, by the submission date. You can click on each anthology and find the submission dates and all the versions. We don't actually have metadata search per se. It's something we do need to address, you know that. You know, you should be able to search for comments, you know, give me comments by a particular user, give me methods by a particular user, and so on. We don't have that, but just going to add that soon. Next slide, please. So one of the things, and one of the reasons we haven't done that before is that we have actually changed significantly the metadata representation in Bar Portal. And as we discussed with Todd prior to the call, so Todd was also talking about an earlier branch of Bar Portal, and one of the major changes over the summer was that we moved to anthology-based representation in metadata. What this means is that all the metadata about the anthologies, you know, system data fixes the anthologies, all the information the anthology author has provided, you know, all the internal system information, in fact, you know, which table does the anthology reside in, and, you know, when was it modified, it's all represented as instances in the Bar Portal metadata anthology. In fact, if you go to Bar Portal, you can see the anthology there, you can browse it, and you can see that, you know, there are classes for representing the anthology. We know some comments, mapping and reviews are coming soon. Another thing that we have also part of the metadata, as of September, Bar Portal allows you to submit views in the anthologies. For example, as I mentioned, many of Bar Portal anthologies are very large. So, for instance, there was Foundation Model of Anatomy with 80,000 concepts, and many users want, you know, create some expressions of resume that they want to share with others, saying, you know, this is useful for other schools, for example, dealing with liver, because we need this fancy expression of liver content, liver-related content. So we're lucky that we're going to control the authors to post this essential derivative of the main anthology and write metadata on them, and so that others, again, can come. And they become basically first-class objects themselves. But that's sort of the description of the use of the relationship to the master anthology is also part of the metadata. And so each, so for example, each anthology version is an instance in that anthology, and, you know, probably they always have all the information that Bar Portal needs to display. Next slide, please. So just an example, you know, this is a snapshot of this, of how we represent metadata in Bar Portal. You can see that, you know, the box at the bottom is the Bar Portal metadata anthology. That it's an all anthology that imports a number of other anthologies. For example, it imports the other anthology metadata vocabulary, OMV, which provides a lot of vocabulary for described anthologies and their versions. It imports the Protege Changes and Annotations anthologies, which provides the vocabulary for creating notes and for describing changes. And then the fourth one is the Persian mapping control, which is a device for the vocabulary for mapping. And it also adds a number of its own service classes or classes that are just not present in those ontologies. Next slide, please. Okay, knowledge domain, we've already discussed it, so we can move on. Next slide. Basically just going through the delta. Okay, so our plan, and where we think, which gaps we think we will fill in the near future, which ones we're leading to the community, or we're hoping others will do with other implementations, the federation, and so on. So, okay, short to mid-term plans. As I mentioned, we'll migrate the rest of the metadata to the ontology-based representation. One of the things that is it's very relevant in the biomedical community. I'm not sure how relevant it would be for the OR communities at large. It's more structured to the nodes. And to use the barcode and to use the repository is one of the way to collect feedback and request for ontology changes. So biomedical ontologies are often used for annotation, for example, annotation of, say, papers, research papers. So if the curator is going on annotating the paper, they could find a term that's not present, for example, in the ontology. So what they want to do is, you know, go to the form and fill in the form. Okay, please give me this. I want you to add this term. You know, here's what its name should be. Here's the definition. Here's why I'm adding it. And so this structured node should feed directly into the ontology author in whatever term they're using to expand the ontology. So we have other uses for nodes that we're looking at, but basically adding more structure than what we have right now.
Natasha?
Yes?
See, the structured node concept, is that like a change request system or process for an ontology?
Yes, in part. For the change request, yes. Some of the structured nodes are for the change request and additions. Others are, for example, there's another use case that we have for read code, which are, the different inflection and different regional differences in how the concept is used. So ability to describe those regional differences is another use case for nodes. But, I mean, much of that and much of what comes for the structure there is from the change request, to provide changes, right, to enable structured change requests. So as I mentioned, another big item on our plate is integration of BioBoard1 Web Protege. One of the things that will likely be the first new thing that will appear, probably in the next few weeks, is ontology valuation metrics. So, you know, we have the ontologies, you know, it will be fairly easy for us to provide various metrics, you know, some statistics, number of classes, number of properties, some quality assurance metrics, such as, you know, which classes don't have any definitions, or, you know, which classes, some very structural metrics, you know, which classes may have only single subclass, which may or may not be a problem, but it's an indication of some potential problem. Another thing that our biomedical collaborators ask us are auditing metrics. So, again, some of the ontologists have an author associated to each class, and they want to have some metrics of, you know, who has contributed the most to particular ontology. So that will be coming. We have most of it in place, but we're not quite there yet, but that will be coming out fairly soon. As I mentioned, various access controls in private areas of BioPortal. My BioPortal is another concept that a lot of our users are asking for. So when I come to BioPortal, I'm only interested in a particular set of 10 ontologies, and these are the only ones I want to see. These are the only ones I want to get notified about. You know, when I search, I want only to search through those ontologies. So being able to configure this, configure your notification, and to configure your user experience is one of the things we are looking at. I think I have one more slide. Oh, yes, I do. Okay. We are also in the process of, we will be, and we don't quite know the deadline yet, but it will be sometime in January or February, we'll be submitting a competing renewal to BioPortal. I'm thanking for support letters from many of you. That's where our kind of big infrastructure changes will come in that renewal. And that includes federation. We definitely do want to look at federation. Scalability is one issue, all of that you can achieve in some sense, you know, with kind of local federation across different servers locally. But we are in biomedicine, particularly medicine, as you might imagine, there are many users who just don't want to share their data or not allowed for various privacy considerations to share data or ontologies. So they want, you know, their own instances of BioPortal, but those that can talk nicely to other instances for the parts that they're willing to share. So that's something we're definitely looking at. Triple store, moving to triple store storage mechanisms, that's also for the renewal. Then another interesting thing is that we're looking at is, you know, using this ontology to generate custom tailored dictionaries, for example, for various natural language processing applications, or value sets, you know, for various applications that need, you know, forms being filled in within a particular value set. And again, in biomedicine, there many use cases like that. And we're looking at other things, you know, in part for the renewal of this, we're still looking for the request for applications so that we know what NIH will be looking for, but, you know, what should we say, there will be more stuff there, more interesting stuff there. And that's all I have, actually.
Thank you, Natasha. Nisha, are you going to say anything?
I defer with Natasha. If you have any questions, anything specific, I'd be happy to respond.
Oh, again, I want to thank you for putting comments in the code. It helped a great deal.
No problem. You're very welcome.
Okay, well, if you're not going to provide any additional information, then it's on to Ken Oslowski. He's going to talk about OR in the classroom, experience report. Ken?
Hi. Yeah, I'm actually teaching a course, and one interesting aspect of, research and study in general is that it's really amazing how much you find out when you try to teach something as opposed to just understanding it, you know, yourself. So it definitely was a revealing experience to try to, you know, have OR used by students in the classroom. So we move on to slide 2. Let me just begin by saying there are lots of ways that we can promote the OOR. Right now it seems to be mainly by personal contact. That's a kind of bottom-up approach. I mean, in theory, one could mandate this. Government agencies, for example, could mandate the use of the OOR. That's a more top-down approach. You could make really nice user-friendly tools that make it really easy to use and don't need to understand very much. That's kind of lowering the bar for entry. And the last one is classroom materials, actually trying to teach more about OOR to try to raise awareness. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. And one interesting aspect of it is that I learned a lot. I provided useful feedback as a side effect. Let me go on to slide 3. The typical course assignments that I've been giving, and let me point out that this is a course in component software with SOA, with service-oriented architecture. So with that context, you have to understand that I'm looking almost exclusively at OOR from the point of view of it as a web service. So, for example, the GUI aspect of it is essentially being ignored in my class. So the students only see OOR as being just this software component that they can interact with. So they did things like created a UML model for the OOR as a web service. I didn't know at the time, since this was a while ago, last month when the course started, that there was a that BioPortal had developed this ontology for the metadata. That would have been very useful, but it was also a useful experience to have my students actually try to figure out what it is that's being stored in the OOR. Remember, these are students who don't know very much about ontology. They learned about it in my course, and they know nothing at all about biology. But they were looking at the OOR sandbox, not at BioPortal, so it really wasn't necessary for them to have any biomedical background. And I should say that Natasha's definitely right. I mean, there's really nothing about biomedicine in their implementation, and students had no difficulty at all interacting with the OOR sandbox. And except, of course, I'll explain some of the issues that come up. Another kind of course assignment is transformations of the results. You get the results and you transform them, and then you use that, you repurpose the results. That's a very typical thing to be doing with in SOA architectures. Another big aspect is the marshaling and what I call the basic semantics of what you're dealing with. There's a lot of issues come up with serialization and deserialization and making sure that everything is nice and consistent. And consistency here just means being able to make sure that what you're doing is the same as what you were, it's exactly the same as what you're supposed to be doing. I mean, it's really a kind of just question of equality and sameness, not something like inference. And finally, I'm going to be having students develop the rudimentary OOR all by themselves, initially RESTful service and then later state-based, where they'll also be federating instances and composing of those services. So they'll be experimenting with some things that have not yet been done with the OOR. Going to slide 4, the first issue was, of course, the storage model. We didn't have an ontology, so we were just looking at the OOR sandbox as having a model defined implicitly by the program and whatever we could see from the from interacting with it using the REST services. Clearly a better storage model than the CSP that we have now is formally defined by an ontology, and this has additional benefits of better understanding and documentation. It would have been a lot easier to teach about the OOR if I had been able to present it this way. And it's also important when we start to consideration of interoperability.
Okay.
Now, yes?
A question here. When you say the formally defined by the ontology, the storage model is represented as an ontology?
Yes, I was talking about what it is that the OOR actually stores as a repository. That is what would, what really what the students were trying to grapple with.
Okay.
Right. Then going on to slide 5. Interesting issue came up almost immediately is what the identifiers were supposed to be representing. There were these integers that appear in the result sets that were coming back. Not clear how they were generated, where they were coming from, what they were supposed to be doing with them. There are multiple codes and identifiers floating around. These are the kinds of things that really don't show up that much when you start looking at an ontology. It's more of an implementation issue. But clearly some kind of standard for names and identifiers is really needed if we're going to start moving to federated instances, as my students are going to be doing later in the term. And also useful when you interoperate with other services. I believe some discussion of this has already gone on in the OOR and Oxlog forum, and of course there are standards that have been developed for naming, and I think we hopefully want to be able to use all of those.
Okay, now these are names and identifiers for the ontologies or for the representation in the particular implementation?
Not clear. I mean, once you have the storage model, then there's a question of, what are the names for these? How do you identify them so that if they're stored in multiple places, if there are different components of it stored in various places, how do you identify what you're talking about? So you have an unambiguous representation. If you have a centralized system that's easy enough to give a database identifier, when you start federating, the change is completely.
Yes.
Then another issue on slide 6, or what I call basic semantics. I mean, just when are two entities the same? You run some service, you get back some data. How do you know whether that's the same as something you might have gotten from some other service? At this point, we were just looking at ontologies and categories. This is basically just the metadata associated with the ontology, not the ontology itself. We didn't have a formal definition, so strictly speaking, even the task itself is not well defined. We talked about what we mean by equality. And a clearly equality of input that the XML XML semantic is not correct. That would input sets would, for example, specify that the order of the child element is actually important. And it's pretty clear that it isn't. But things like that are not obvious. And there are also fundamental attributes. How do we distinguish them from the incidental ones? Like, for example, up the time that some information was uploaded or downloaded might appear in one of these result sets. That doesn't seem to be particularly relevant for testing the quality, but how do you know? So a formal semantics would resolve this issue, and right now we don't really have that. On slide 7, we have the issue of marshalling. Now, students, this is a course in SOA, so of course, marshalling, serialization, deserialization is a very important part of the course. And right now, and by the way, this is not, when I say current approach, I don't mean OOR sandbox, I mean basically all of it, is that you define your mapping procedurally just to make it actually rather programming language dependent. A better approach to this would, of course, have a formal specification of the transformation. And when you think about it, I mean, ontologies really don't do that. It's not really part of what, you know, you specify an ontology. You don't say in a formal way how you do serialization and serialization. Moving on to slide 8. Service specification. Again, this is a course in service. So right now, the model is RESTful. REST in general in the industry is fairly informally defined. Request parameters are encoded in the URL, and the result is returned back in XML. A better approach to this would be to have some formal definition of the service specification, where perhaps you do something like request and result using RDF. And but of course, this leads to the issue of how you then make this compatible with WSDL, which is, of course, the XML base. But a better model would hopefully address this issue. Slide number 9, transformations. The OOR has one of its requirements that it supports multiple representations for ontologies and metadata. But since you have multiple representations, you're going to need transformations, both from one to the other. These would be two-way transformations. Back and forth. The ideal, of course, would be invertibility, but that's usually not the case. It's not actually possible in all cases because the different representations don't have the same features. You know, there's some will often some features and others will often others. And so you can't actually have full invertibility. Naive transformations, they're just, you know, You just set up a transformation and try to get it to produce something in the other representation model. It might even be a very good transformation, but it could actually be unbounded. And unbounded there means that if you apply the reverse, the other way coming back, you get back something which is bigger. And if you keep repeating it, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And as I say, if you actually look at naive transformations, that is the case. It's just, you know, increasing the size of what you produce, even though, in some sense, it is fiddle. In any case, with some effort, you could get, as an attainable goal, to get stable transformation. But to achieve this, you generally need to have some kind of annotation so that when you do the reverse transformation, you get back what you started. Unfortunately, not all languages seem to have the ability to add such annotations. Students are currently exploring these two-way transformations in my course, but this is a typical research problem in general, as you might imagine. The last slide, number slide 10, are a few future issues that I haven't yet covered in the course, but I suspect will be quite significant. One of these is this idea of ontology configurations. Of course, this is from software engineering. If you have lots of versions of an artifact that is used by other artifacts which also occur in versions, then you need some kind of configuration to kind of put this all together as a coherent whole. And it's pretty clear we're going to have to do that too if we're going to have you know, alive or what we are. Situation kinetics is another interesting area where you basically look at actually a relatively small amount of information which is within a particular situation, and you try to make inferences within the situation. And finally, there's the OOR component architecture, which I believe was mentioned before. We really need to have everything formally specified, not just how they interact with the OOR, but how the OOR parts interact with each other. And so I think, I guess the bottom line is it would really be great if you could get all of this stuff, all of the OOR formally specified using ecology. So, Pat, you?
Thank you, Ben. That was very interesting. I like some of the issues you came across, which shouldn't have occurred to me yet. And given this nice presentation and what you've discovered, are you going to have a summary of this using full English sentences as opposed to just PowerPoint slides?
Well, if the class is going on right now. It keeps evolving. It would be nice at the end of the class to have an experience report that would be what you've written up very nicely.
So some of these issues that you came across would be of particular interest. I think I've made notes of some of them.
Yes, I really agree. And you know, at the end, you know, it would be good to put it all together. And also, I guess one thing I haven't really talked about is a pedagogical issue. If you're trying to teach this subject, what do you have to do?
That's another problem space. I don't get you.
That's a really different one, but you know, I did not touch on that at all.
Well, then my challenge that I put at the end of my talk about starting development of OOR ontology, would that facilitate just the last point you made?
Oh yeah, all the way. In fact, it kind of goes through the whole presentation. Yeah, that the more you can have this, clearly the better it would be. And not just because of the inherent advantages in the OOR, but also pedagogical advantages. I think I had a hard time explaining what the OOR was all about without having something like that, to act as kind of a basis.
Well, maybe as one of the assignments at near the end of this course, you might want to suggest to your class that they come up with their own, if you like, functionality decomposition, and how they might restructure what they've done based on the notion of the core functionalities that things supposed to have.
Oh yeah, that's actually the last bullet point in the future issues.
So, but have you, the students are going to do that?
The students are actually going to be building their own OOR.
Oh no, not that. But
yeah, they're going to have to componentize it.
Oh okay.
So they're going to be building it using these components. So they're actually going to be trying to do it. A very rudimentary one, though. I wouldn't say they're going to try to do the whole thing.
Okay, no, that's fine. That may give us some additional knowledge and save us some time.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
What's it called, the wisdom of the crowd or something?
Oh. No, I was thinking of cheap labor.
Oh, cheap labor. Okay.
They have time, too. Okay. Well, thanks, Ken. That was very interesting. And now, Elisa, this is going to talk to us about requirements and initial steps towards an OOR for standards management. Now, actually, that brings up something else, because if you're not aware, the Department of Defense has a huge issue with standards management, and their group inside of DISA is trying to solve that right now. I assume you're working with them, Elisa?
So I am in contact with some of those people. I've done some work with Lynn Levine, who's at DISA, and is involved at least peripherally in that effort. The standards that I want to talk about here are much more constrained than that as a starting point. So what Lynn and other folks at DISA are interested in long-term is much, much broader repository in general for managing standards. What we're talking about at the OMG and what Mike Talk really addresses is a much narrower view, but with broader vision. So the narrow view initially is that there's been a need, and I'll talk about this in a minute, for managing standard ontologies or vocabularies or models more generally that we develop at the OMG and making them publicly available in a way that's much more accessible than it is today. And so I'll talk about what's been motivating that, how, what's happened to date, what some of the challenges we see are, and where we think it's going, and then we can talk a little bit about how that might map or not map what you want to do with the OR. Having said that, from my perspective, the way that standards generally are managed at OMG today, and document management even more broadly than that, makes everything difficult to find. And so, you know, ultimately, it would be great if there was a broader solution for that. And I think that is closer to what DISA is looking for. There is some work that people have done to develop, what I'll describe as kind of a concept map, linking some of the various standards together and showing how they work together in a narrow-ish domain, especially for terminology and vocabulary work. Judith Newton, who has participated in the ISO metadata standards working group for many, many years, and who I work with on that committee, has done some great work as a starting point on that. For those of you who are familiar with the XMDR project, which you can find at xmdr.org, somewhere on that website there is a link to the concept map that she created to describe how all of these standards are connected. And that's very interesting, just to get your arms around how many terminology and vocabulary standards there are, how they work together or don't work together. And while she hasn't had the funding to keep it current, it's a really great introduction to some of that stuff. So I encourage you to look at it. But having said that, the topic that I have for today is much more constrained. It's more about some work that we've been doing at OMG to start looking at what it would take to make any ontologies, vocabularies, models we develop at OMG publicly available, and to use a repository as a basis for doing that. So why don't we go to slide 2. So the motivation for us started out with the ontology PSIG and folks in the what's now called business modeling, the main task force, both wanting to develop terminologies, vocabularies, models for various purposes, both being asked by a number of folks to do that and wanting to make them publicly available and also wanting to create vocabularies that we could express either in any of the representation paradigms that we support in the ontology definition metamodel, which includes not only RDF and OWL and common logic, but also topic map. Anything represented in any of those on the ODM side and in the business modeling side, for those of you who are familiar with this, there is a specification called the Semantics for Business Vocabulary and Rules, or SVBR. And so the idea was that if we were going to develop vocabularies at OMG, we should specify them in the languages we support using the standards that we've developed, and therefore they should all be hooked together and people should be able to find them and use them in their applications development or systems development. And so the first thing that we thought about is, well, in fact, we're doing this work on an information management metamodel now, which updates the Common Warehouse metamodel, for those of you familiar with that. Probably the most interesting feature of IMM is that for the very first time, it will contain a standard model for entity relationship diagramming, which nobody has been able to standardize because the vendors always had their own way of doing it. And now in IMM, for the first time, we will have a vendor agreement at least from a number of the major vendors, including Embarcadero, Computer Associates, also IBM, Oracle. I think Sybase is the major vendor who is. But anyway, so the vendors are all agreeing on what a standard ER model should look like and are creating a meta model for it and a way of developing it using UML tools. This is huge. This is a really big deal. So now if we make information architecture generally a first-class citizen at OMG and say, look, information modeling goes hand-in-hand with systems and software modeling, with process modeling, all of these things should be done at the same level, not making information modeling a second-class citizen, especially since information and content tend to live longer than implementation strategies and software technologies. So all those things considered, we want to make sure that these things are first-class citizens and that we provide a place where people can go to get models that are those standards for representing entity relationship diagrams, the ontologies that explain them, different process models that go along with them for governance purposes, any SDDR vocabularies that are related to them. All of those things should be tied together and delivered to our members and the broader community through a repository that is standards-based, is consistent, is something people can rely on. It's a place where they can go to say, okay, here is the standard XML schema for this, here is the standard OWL ontology for this, here is the standard SDDR vocabulary for it, here is the entity relationship logical model for it. We can count on all of these things as having been through the standard process. They are related to one another, they're designed in some way, we can talk about why certain decisions are made, etc. That's kind of the pie in the sky view. Evan Wallace and I and a number of other folks in the ontology pieces at OMG floated this idea with Richard Soley, who's the president, probably more than 2 years ago, and eventually were able to get people to agree that this was something that would be very important for OMG going forward as we start to publish vocabularies or models that we want to have become standard. And it's already needed to manage those schema, XMI models and other related artifacts that go along with the specifications we've already published, even without the ontologies that describe their terminology or that represent their semantics. And so this whole notion of putting this kind of a repository out there got a lot of attention when we first proposed it. People were really excited about it, but nobody had any resources to put into it. All of us sort of are familiar with that story. So the focus, though, for the purposes of OMG was to be on very high-value standards-oriented models, things that had been through the standards process and which our governance policies at OMG had already been applied to through that process, rather than collecting models from the community in order to make those available as well. So kind of a narrower focus than what you have for the OOR, but in some ways broader based on the kinds of things that we would want to manage in them. So can you go back to briefing slide 3, please? Okay. So the history of that is, in early 2008, the ontology piece put an request for information out for people to propose solutions for this repository. And in December last year, almost a year ago, we had Natasha and Tanya came to present on Collaborative Protégé and on the bio portal. Corey Kastner gave a talk on their enterprise knowledge base work. We followed that up with some discussions in March. We had a semantic information day early this year in a Washington, D.C. technical meeting that was really well attended, and people stayed through the very end of the day, which was fascinating to me that they would stick around that late. But very well attended, especially in a down market when people aren't really attending conferences. for the better part of the day, we had 50, 60 people in there. And that really wasn't okay. The whole dynamic that was quite good. Talking about oncology, talking about the ODM, talking about implementation work that people had done, and talking about what we want to do going further on the roadmap at OMG, including the repository efforts. So at the same time, there's been work on a vocabulary just to represent dates and times, to see if we could actually map an SDVR vocabulary to an OWL's ontology or common logic representation, to understand what those mappings needed to look like, what technology would be needed to support those kinds of mappings and that sort of stuff. And that work's been a real struggle. And so mostly on the SDVR, just with SDVR alone, getting people to agree on what they need for business purposes for representation of dates and times has been challenging. And so the SysML folks have contributed quite a bit on that front in terms of representation of quantities and units of measure. Nicholas Rousset, who participates both here at Ontlog and in the LNG, and Roger Burkhardt and a number of other folks have been working on the SysML units of measure piece, which they are contributing to the units of measure discussion for Ontlog. And so the move on the space and time front would be to then take advantage of the work that's being done on the units of measure side and kind of synchronize with that, just for the date and time purposes. We will come back around and develop a similar vocabulary using ODM to represent that, and then see what happens with the mapping. So that's kind of where that stands. That'll be the first instance of a real vocabulary that we want to use as a case study for this repository. So slide 4, please. So in terms of a solution for OMG, we really need to support this notion of multiple modeling paradigms, UML, ODM, which provides stereotype UML, and a meta model for interchange, but also in the native languages, which you might have these vocabularies in, RDF, schema, OWL, common logic, SDVR, support for this entity relationship, diagramming standard in IMM, and with ISO-STEP, because a lot of the manufacturing community is very interested in the new standards, and there is a new meta model and profile for STEP in OMG. And also use cases for model publication and for using the repository at OMG are still very much needed. So we're hoping to piggyback on some of the work that you all have done on the blog for that. So the result for us, the requirements are really a single repository, at least initially, with a small number of vocabularies compared to some of the things you do at File Portal or just be doing for this broader repository. But likely a higher number of modeling paradigms and mapping between them will be needed just out of the box. We're hoping that we can take advantage of some of the lessons learned in the collaborative protege and some of the jazz and the network that IBM has done in terms of collaborative development. We're also very much aware that sharing the metadata, not only because of the BioPortal activity, but our more broad SysML activities, OMG, sharing the metadata is essential, and having a repository that supports that is critical for us. We need to have very strong governance, evolution, and documentation support built in that represents the process that we engage in. Especially some of our standards are migrated to the ISO community, so there needs to be very clear guidance for that. And again, use case development, application materials, and more repository instruction. And in order to get this done at OMG, obviously it will take six member organizations to drive this. Hopefully, you can see some of the who all are doing, what Kyle Portal has done, in order to get this done for that. Slide 5. And next slide, please.
Sorry, okay. I have some internet connection problems, so if people would continue to move the slides. Yeah.
Is to identify and address some of the research challenges that we have. And I'm going to mention the use cases, but the use cases for us will clearly drive that metadata architecture, which is the ontology that I think the ontology that Ken was talking about towards the end of his talk. For BioPortal, it is based on the OOR work. We also use that for some of the metadata definitions from, may I say, an 11-79 community and take into account some of our government colleagues have had some very rigorous requirements for metadata on that front. But hopefully we'll be able to share the results of that work with you all. We do need heavy support for linking references and design rationale with the content of our repository. Again, we think the development of a governance model will be critical and there may be some challenges there. And so those are the kinds of things that we think we will need to spend some time on going forward. And I guess stay tuned for the right answer to that. Slide 6, please. So just a quick reminder, I actually showed this slide. Pardon me?
This is Todd. Hold on. The slides aren't changing.
I noticed that myself. If any of you were able to download them.
Just as long as you know.
Yeah. No, I noticed it.
Okay, thank you. Sorry.
But hopefully you don't want me to stop talking.
No.
So my slide 6 on the top says lessons learned from ISO STEP. And I heard a few people talk a little bit about some of these things, but I'm happy to remind you of this, and this is a slide I've used in the past, but for us, from a vocabulary perspective, the notion of designing for reuse and being able to make the models that we support for our OMG work componentized, modularized, very reusable is critical from the perspectives of standards setting. And so what that means is that we will need this notion of kind of a make file, and I haven't really heard very much discussion of this, although people do this throughout LimPorts and things like that, but the notion of make files, it helps you put smaller clusters of models together based on dependencies to create larger models, which themselves may be reusable. We definitely need to do this from a standards perspective. We suspect that there may be some issues that you may want to consider for your ontolog OOR that help people recognize when there are dependencies. I noticed, Todd, your comment about, trying to avoid some of the hierarchical issues there, but I still believe there will be dependencies and that you want to be able to represent what those are if you can.
Yes.
In the metadata. And I point to the STEP community because they have developed many, many, many repositories to do this sort of thing in the manufacturing community for the last umpteen years, and they do have processes already for quality and integration review and sign-off on everything that goes into their shareable repository, which I think we could be well-informed by. So I just wanted to point that out as a resource for us to use on the OOR side.
Well, that's also consistent with the drive for modularization of ontology. I guess an open area and research area in some regard.
Absolutely. And that's that sort of top bullet addresses that as well. I have just a couple more quick slides. This next one talks about, which is slide 7 for those of you who have it, talks about the status of related work at OMG. I have links to a number of the modeling standards. The ODM, as many of you may know, was published, 1.0 version was published in May, and we're working on a 1.1 revision, which addresses mostly usability issues in the UML profiles. The metamodels are fairly stable. That revision hopefully will come out towards the middle of next year. Just given the OMG publication timeline, we're going to submit some of the changes that we're anticipating in an interim sort of what's called a convenience document in December. Then the IMM, the set of models that includes the standard for ER diagramming. I have the link in my slides to the RFP. Hopefully the revised submission will be presented in Jacksonville in February and will be then publicly available for people to comment on shortly thereafter. SBVR was also published in 2008. Their 1.1 revision is anticipated again early next year. And you can also look at the revised submission, the RFP for the date-time vocabulary and what people were expecting to do there, and I have a link to that. And finally, to the SysML units work, for those of you who are interested in units of measure but didn't have the link to the SysML specification, it is an appendix that they fondly call QUDV, which stands for quantities, units, and I forget what else, data types and something else. So anyway, that appendix of the SysML standard is publicly available, and I have the link at the bottom of that slide 7. And finally, where are we going on slide 8? Next steps include continued discussions both on the vocabulary requirements for units and dates and times in Long Beach in early December, and follow-up discussion on what we need from a repository perspective. Both of those are expected to happen in December in Long Beach. And so for any of those of you who are on the West Coast and can make it to the meeting, we would absolutely welcome your participation. So that will be the week of December the 7th in Long Beach at the OMG Technical Meeting.
Thank you, Alyssa.
You're welcome.
Quick question.
Yeah.
When you talk about vocabulary here, what does that entail?
So it could be an RDS vocabulary. It could be an OWL ontology. At OMG,
Is that the representation of the vocabulary?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So a model of it. It could be an XML schema. It could be an SVVR vocabulary. It could be a common logic ontology. We use the term vocabulary because people were kind of abusing the term ontology at OMG. And so vocabulary is something that people, you know, at least don't complain about and abuse as much. And so as long as we tell them what we mean by it, then it seems to be more accessible to some people and not as abused.
Okay, because when other people use the term vocabulary, they mean just a list of terms.
Yeah, understood.
Okay.
We mean something much richer than that.
Oh, okay, good. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Mike, are you online? Mike Dean? Well, perhaps not. Mike wasn't sure whether he was be able to join us today. I don't know if he was on earlier and had to drop off. So he just forgot to unmute himself. So I guess we've lost Michael.
He must have been on at one point, Todd, because his name shows up in the attendee list.
Oh, Peter put him there? Okay. I didn't refresh the page. Yep. Michael, you out there? Peter, are you out there?
Mike Dean is listed in the chat room.
He is? I can't get the chat room to show.
As is Peter.
They're busy chatting.
And Peter is starting to write something.
Okay, where's the chat room? Where's the chat room? Out there. I'll just get where to find it. Oh, there we go.
Actually, Peter's there twice.
Oh, there we go.
Peter's having trouble with his internet connection.
Oh. Okay. Well, I'd like to open it up for discussion if Mike's not going to present. Because I may have to bail early and get back to a meeting. unfortunately, I have to drive to the meeting.
Peter said to move ahead with the question and answer.
Okay. Can he open everyone up? Paul? I think it's a chat page.
Well, if you want to ask a question, just press star 3.
Okay.
But better than that would be to raise your hand in the chat room.
Let me get to the chat room first.
And so far, nobody has raised their hand in the chat room. Mike Dean is...
Okay, ask people to do a star 3 to unmute, okay.
Mike Dean is typing right now.
No, Michael, oh. I cannot hear you.
No.
Hi.
No, we can't hear you.
Sorry, I didn't realize I had to do the... remember, I had to do the star 3.
Oh. Hi, Mike.
Okay.
Hello, Michael.
I was actually on my fourth slide already, but...
okay.
Do you want me to go ahead?
Yes, please. Could you start at the beginning, though?
Yes, I will. Okay. I will.
Michael, could you get a little closer to your microphone?
I can try.
Thank you.
Is this better?
A little.
Maybe I can switch my handset for a second. Is this better?
Well, there's less echo.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and try that? So I've been looking at the relation between the earlier visions for OOR and the current state of the system. If you move to slide 2, the approach that I've taken here is to take a couple of the key slides from the roadmap that we presented at the end of the Ontology Summit 2008 face-to-face meeting, and interface and interleave them with some reflections on kind of our current state. So one of the slides was we said that OOR, moving to slide 3, sorry, OOR is an open source software platform with one or more public instantiations of that platform and a sustainable organization. And if you move on to slide 4, I think actually we've largely accomplished 1 and 2, and have really made pretty good progress on number 3, the sustainability issue. Particularly the alignment with BioPortal, which is a program with some several additional years left on it, and the submitted proposals that we've done to NSF and others, I think is a good strategy for the short to midterm. And hopefully once we actually develop a significant user community, that will help help beyond that. But of course, other options like endowments and things like that would certainly be welcome as well. The next slide was basically focused on essentially a modular software architecture where people could basically select the different options that they want. And, including things like, the languages that they were supporting, the mappings and things of the, quality and gatekeeping, options. So basically everybody who instantiated an instance of OOR could essentially pick and choose, which capabilities, they want. Let's see, moving on to slide 6. I think that basically, we've got the right mechanism, to still do this type of thing, though perhaps using somewhat different mechanisms than what we were thinking of at that point, which is primarily Java interfaces. So using things like enterprise service buses to compose different services and things like that. I think the work that Michael Gruninger and his students are doing for Common Logic, is a great example of multi-language support and figuring out basically how to support that reasonably, and a good step in the modularity direction. The other thing that I think was a really good sign is the distribution of some of the BioPortal installation instructions. And it seems like the installation and customization, is getting quite a bit easier as we go along. One thing that that concerned me a little bit was that we seem to have lost some of the participation of some of the XMDR folks. And, I think it would be beneficial to try to re-engage with them and perhaps particularly use that as an example of federation between heterogeneous repositories. So bottom line for me is I think that the current state of ORs is actually quite consistent with the vision from Ontology 27, from the Ontology Summit in 2008, but differs a little bit the implementation details. And I also went back and reread the communique, and my feeling is that it's also consistent with the goals expressed there. So that's actually it.
Oh, thank you, Michael. Michael Kruninger has his hand up, or has his something up, symbol up. Michael? Star 3, I believe.
Hi, Todd. No, I was just typing in a question for you, just for posterity. But if we want to start the discussion, you can do that. I can just ask you verbally.
Okay. I don't know if I can answer, but I can try.
Well, no, so we're just asking for some more detailed examples of what you meant by the rules and policies. In your OR slides. By the rules weren't the representation language, right? Rules were about more the governance of the repository.
Well, there could be separate associated rules with an ontology for particular domain or application usage. But then I guess the ones that come to my mind more often are the rules for the actual operation of an OOR. Rather than hard coding certain capabilities or requirements or policies into the code, you want to run them as rules.
So this would be things like,
you have
like rules for submission of an ontology sort of thing?
Yeah, or if there are issues or particular aspects of a representation language that need to be checked. You know, for instance, I believe Natasha said they were going to do something in terms of evaluation metrics that would look at whether each class has a definition in it or explanatory material. Maybe that's a rule that you want to put in for some languages and not for others because they don't have a method to do that, or you're just being really anal and you want them all to have that.
Okay.
So it could cover governance. It could cover the issue of domain specification or usage specification associated with particular ontology or group of ontologies. Maybe it has something to do with modularization on how you make use or represent dependencies among ontologies or the instance data thereof. I'm not sure right now.
And then, so for policies, so I just wanted to clarify where you were drawing the line between what you want the OOR ontology, if you will, and what would just be some general policies. You know, like, for example, if I have two different, you know, ways of axiomatizing some kind of relation, you know, is the policy kind of the question, which one do we include, or do we include both, and if we include both, how are they distinguished? Is that what you mean by policy, or does policy be something actually, you know, written in a formal language?
Well, I'd assume that the policy would be written in the formal language, hopefully, and then maybe implemented via rules. Or maybe just only, it doesn't have to be the form that I just mentioned. But in terms of the policy, you can get down to issues that Natasha brought out that some of their people would like to have, which is a privacy issue.
Right.
So if I'm running an instance of OOR behind a corporate firewall, maybe I do want to expose some of my work to other partners or to the general public, and then others I don't want to for other reasons. And that could be just a policy-driven thing. So if a user comes up and wants to submit an ontology, they have to decide, well, is it part of this or is it part of that? And maybe the rules would have to check to see if there are other dependencies in the ontology that would cross over the particular governance policy invoked at that instance.
Okay.
So I mean, it can become really elaborate. I don't know all of the possible use cases that you can imagine or that would need to be supported, but we should be able to start off with something simple. And fortunately, I never got a response back from the person at IHMC who has such a capability. Anyone else from IHMC? Like Pat? No.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Michael. As opposed to, Michael, there's a question about modularization. I'll have to get back to you. I don't have time to answer right now, but you'll have to go back to another meeting somewhere else.
No problem.
Okay. Are there other questions? VNC2 has their hand up. Oh, Terry. Yes?
This is Terry.
Hi.
I wrote it down there. I'm concerned about the issue of real time. You talk about it as if it's a prohibition. It sounds to me more like an accommodation for performance reasons.
Well, yes. The only reason I brought it up is because it occurred to me that implicitly we had assumed we were not going to do that. Well, that wasn't even a consideration that this be thought about.
Well, what do you mean by real time? I mean, are you just talking about machine-to-machine communications? Is that what you're objecting to? Or?
No. That's what I'm saying. We are not considering trying to support at this point. But yes, a real time would be machine-to-machine sorts of interaction.
And if we're talking RESTful interfaces, they're almost by definition not real time, right? They're always asynchronous.
So that's just one particular implementation mechanism, but yeah.
Well, but you said RESTful was your architectural base.
No, I did not.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
If people thought I said that, please no.
Okay.
I don't want to get into that particular implementation strategy or paradigm, and we need to use it currently, but I'm sure given a couple of years, there'll be something else out there to use.
But you are saying that you want to limit or eliminate the possibility of synchronous communication or synchronous dialogue.
No, I'm not saying that at all.
Well, that's what real time means to me.
Can I chime in on this?
Certainly.
At least in my course, we are doing SOAP and real time communication, and where I mentioned situations and situation awareness, that is very definitely real time.
Good thing to you speak again. When I'm talking about real time, I guess I should have qualified it better. I'm talking, well, I said near real time, which in terms of situation awareness, many of the systems need that. But then there's also hard real time, and there's a whole range of values of what they mean by real time in there, depending on the particular community you're talking to.
Right. I meant near real time.
Okay, yeah.
That's all. Not real time.
You mean hard real time?
Not hard real time,
yeah.
Definitely not.
Okay. So, I didn't mean to convey that notion.
Okay, so you're saying that if I want to envision an environment where my machine will automatically access the repository and resolve queries, there's nothing wrong with that then, too.
No, I would suspect that at some point you will want to be able to support that. But in terms of the way we have been thinking, that really wasn't even brought up.
All right.
That's all.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Peter, you have your hand up?
Peter can't communicate by voice.
Hand signals then?
No.
Oh,
chat window.
All right.
Can you read the chat?
Yeah, I see. I had two questions. One on doing editing in the context of OR rather than doing it elsewhere, and the other on your choice of thick clients. Okay, well, actually, those two could be related. On my slide, I talked about different possible human-facing interfaces. Oh, and let me point out, when I was talking about interfaces, those are essentially all outward-looking interfaces. I didn't talk about any necessary inward-looking interfaces, which is a whole other issue. But in terms of the thick client, it may be the case for performance reasons that you don't want to have even 500 users trying to do substance checking or consistency checking on your server system. Maybe you want to give them a thick client so they could do the work on their own thing, or allow them to download something like that. You know, rather than having to run out and get Protégé or get Upgrade Composer or something, you provide that measure of consistency. And this gets back to supporting best practices, if you like. If OOR is asking people to do things in a certain way, then you're necessarily forcing them to do hopefully a best practice, or at least a consistent practice. And maybe in terms of performance or other reasons, you want to give them a thick client rather than just doing everything through the web. Does that answer the question, Peter? And again, one of the reasons I mentioned that is I don't want to have people start thinking that, oh, it's only a web-based interface. Maybe there are other options we haven't considered. Peter still has his hand up. So, Peter and everyone on the line, and our speakers, Natasha, Misha, Alyssa.
Yeah.
Michael and Ken, thank you very much for participation. Now, unfortunately, I have to get back to this other meeting, but I hope I don't cut everyone off. And thank you for your slides and the work you've done. Hopefully, we'll move this forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.